Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Okay, beautiful listeners, you've been listening to part one and part two on Margaret Laird, a true woman worth knowing. You, like me, I've been waiting to hear what happens in part three, because where we left off, Cheryl was telling us, here's Margaret, what a story. She's a missionary in Central Africa. She has met in Africa her husband, Guy Laird, and here they are with two little girls. They're being sent to Ippi, which is 300 miles from where they had been. And there is a problem. There's reports that this group of people they are going to serve are cannibals, and that they have recently eaten a coffee plantation owner and a government official, but the French are telling her, don't worry. They actually tell Sweet Margaret, you're just too big. They're not going to eat you because they're too big. And that once they find out that you have the medical skill and that you've done these schools and you're going to help train them, they will see you as valuable. What a woman to step into that situation. Cheryl.
It was so funny in the book, because she said she didn't quite understand what the French official was saying to her, like, they're not going to eat you. They're not going to eat you. And she wasn't that familiar with the word Ko'oto, and he was kind of chuckling. But her husband, Guy Laird, because he's an engineer, he designed this thing called a push-push. He gave it the name himself, push-push. And what he did is he took a motorcycle wheel and he put a chair on top of it, and then he put these rails on each side of it so that the porters could push someone.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a cart with one wheel, but and four people push it.
Modified two pulling, almost.
two pushing. Exactly.
Wow.
And so that was, but as they were pushing her, these native porters kept saying, oh, Koyoto. And then she asked someone, what does this mean? And, large.
Was she like unusually large, or just compared
to? She was saying that the Bandas happened to be a smaller people.
Okay.
So I think it was compared to the Bandas, who tended to be a smaller people, a little more petite than the other people of Bengoso that she had known. So again, as we said before, 300 miles.
Yeah.
So they're going further into the interior
with
two little girls.
Babies. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
So Guy built them a two-bedroom house, and it was all made out of pressed mud. There were no windows and no doors. So there's openings, but there's no screens, there's no glass. It's just these openings in the mud because you need the ventilation. And the Bandas all crowded around all the windows and the doors, and they were just watching them. So imagine going to this place, they're cannibals, and they're watching you. They're looking in your windows. It's a crowd that's looking in all the windows. They're watching her children.
Yeah.
They're watching her. They're watching Guy. They're watching all their interactions constantly. It's like, being on a live television show or something. They're the thing to watch.
Wow.
And the people are so, so curious. They watch them sleep. They watch Margaret cook. They watch Margaret clean. They watched her give the babies a bath. And finally, she said to them, if you will give me a moment, I will bring the children outside and bathe them in front of you, because I have something to tell you. So as she's bathing the baby, she begins to tell them the gospel. And then Guy preaches to them, and they all agree to come back on Sunday and to be part of
it.
The church.
As long as we have an audience, let's just go.
That's
for
right.
It.
So Margaret began immediately to nurse the people, to help them with all of their ailments. One Sunday, and they were having a pretty good crowd coming on Sundays, but Guy felt like it was probably due to the novelty of this, white couple being there with them, and because of the skill with the nursing that they were coming. So he announced that he was going to teach a discipleship class for those who really, really knew Jesus, and that it would be, a different day of the week. Well, when he went, there was a crowd waiting for him. a crowd. And he's like, no, this is just for people who actually know Jesus and want to serve Jesus with everything in them. If this is not you, if you have another life, if you have other interests, please leave. Nobody left.
Well.
And he said, you know, some of you I've never even seen before. Who are you? And he said, we're the people that Mananga told about Jesus. So Mananga was the young man who chopped their wood and brought them water. And he was busy from, he would come like when the sun rose and he would leave when the sun set, just ministering to this family. Mm. And he had heard of Guy teaching. He'd watched Margaret as she worked and their love. Mm-hmm. And he had given his life to the Lord, but he hadn't told them. But every night after he finished chopping wood and delivering water, he went into this little village and told the people about Jesus. And when they received Jesus, then he'd go into the next village. Mm-hmm. And so he had been evangelizing all these different villages in Ippi. Mm. And so they believed in the Lord and they wanted to be discipled. And then what he would do too, Mananga, if whatever Guy preached, Mananga would take that very message and take it back to the people and tell them the same message that Guy had just preached that day.
I love it.
So he was the hardest, busiest worker they knew. He eventually wanted to go to Bible college, and so they sponsored him to Bible college, and he eventually married, moved, and he became a pastor of one of the largest churches in the Central African Republic, literally a church of thousands.
Wow.
You know, so that's just Mananga. Now, life in Ippi was not easy. They lived with the supplies they had. She made her own bread, and it was gluten-free, but not purposely. But she made it from sweet potato and rice, and she would grind the sweet potatoes, cook them, and make her own flour and make her bread. And she said it was pretty good.
I bet.
Breakfast was usually rice and bananas. Lunch was rice and peanuts. And dinner was rice and peanut butter, usually. But one day, Margaret rode her bike to attend a dying chief. And he was sure he was going to die, and he was more like the Sultan, was ready to have all his wives die with him. But she administered medicinal help for 2 weeks straight. She realized he had been poisoned. And two times a day, she would bicycle to the chief's house and administer. It was actually an enema, twice a day to get this poison out of his system. Well, the chief, after about a month, recovered fully. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to pay them a great amount of money. But they said, no, we won't accept the money. And he said, well, will you accept a gift of meat? And they said, oh, we would love the meat.
Sure.
So they accepted the meat. And the other condition was, Guy said, I want you to gather all the chiefs that you know together and allow me to share the gospel with all the chiefs. And that was the agreement. Now, Guy's father was the editor of a newspaper in Denver, and up until his death, he sent them a copy of every newspaper that he, you know, that he edited, which his company produced, and they only arrived once a month, so they would get these huge stacks of newspaper, and they found the newspapers were amazing. They could use them for curtains. They could
stuff
use
the mattresses.
Exactly. Used them. She had a dining room table, and she would put them across her dining room table and operate with the newspapers below. So they loved the newspapers. When Guy's father died, they had to go to banana leaves, you know, from newspapers.
Oh.
They also battled white ants. White ants were a constant menace. And they would eat a whole mat, the floor mats, within 6 months. So every 6 months, you had to replace the floor mats because they would have been eaten by the white ants. Everyone was telling him, you need to fill up cans with water and put it under all the legs of all your furniture, your beds, everything. Mm. And they had been kind of slow to do it because the ants actually didn't attack people. They just ate like fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And then one morning they awoke and the ants had eaten half of their son's mosquito netting away.
Oh, my.
And so after that, they got the tin cans.
Their
they
son.
Filled them with water.
Wait.
I'm sorry. Yes, they in 1931, they had a son, Clifford.
Yeah, baby. So three children so
three
far.
Three children
so
now.
Four births. The first one died at, the little girl died at 4
Eleanor
months.
Louise, yes.
And then the two girls, they came
And then their boy, their son, Happy Clifford, in 1931.
Okay.
And not only that, but she bottle fed her children. That was just something Margaret did. And she liked to feed them prunes and oatmeal. Don't ask me why. But she didn't have any, she didn't have any way of getting the prunes and oatmeal. But there was a story about a another coffee plantation where the man had told the people that they had to serve on Sundays. And the bandits said, we cannot serve on Sundays. It is the day of the Lord. Mm. And we're sorry. We loved working for you, but we will not work for you because we're going to put the Lord first. So they all left. So he was left with the other men who would work on Sundays. They stole from him. They broke equipment. They wouldn't get there at time. And he's like, where are those people who won't work on Sundays? So he went to Guy and he said, I want these people to come back, and they won't come back. And Guy said, if you will allow them to have Sundays off, to have Bible studies, they'll come back. And they did. And this plantation owner was so thankful for these bandits and realized what a great people these Christians were, that he supplied them with oats and prunes for the rest of his time working there. So, One interesting occasion, there was this witch doctor who opposed them terribly. He was called the Leopard Man because he would dress with leopard skins and even put the claws, and he would steal people's goats, and he would mark up the huts like a leopard had been there, you know, with claws. They all knew it was the Leopard Man who was stealing. First they thought it was a leopard, then they realized it was this witch doctor. So Guy had threatened him and said, you know, don't you do this ever again. We know it's you. And he hated Guy Laird. He hated him because of the gospel. He hated him because so many people were getting saved. He hated him because he was losing his power. And they said this man was not only a drunk, but very, very demonic. You know, just she caught him one time. They caught him, were able to shine their torches on him, their flashlights, and saw that it was him dressed up and just stealing a goat. I mean, it was just horrific. Well, one day Guy was gone, and the Leopard Man showed up with four of his cohorts, comrades. They came, and they were threatening Margaret, and they were telling her to give them the keys to their Ford, which she didn't have. Guy had taken the keys with them. And then they were threatening to kill her. They were threatening to burn the house down with all the children. And so she was praying, like, Lord, what do I do? What do I do? Guy's gone. What do I do? And the scripture came to her, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. So she offered, she was about to feed her children dinner, and she offered to give it to them instead. And she had made rice and bananas, and they ate it gluttonously, like they just ate it up, not leaving any for the children. But whatever the drink was that they had gotten drunk with, it did not interact well with the rice and bananas. And the next thing you know, they were in tremendous pain. They're rolling around on the floor and they're asking for help. And she said, can I give you a shot to take away the pain? And they said, yes. So she gave them each a sedative and they fell sound asleep. She got the authorities who took them into custody. And and they never bothered Margaret or that family.
I thought you were going to say that Guy came home and there's six men asleep on the floor.
Yes. Oh. But no. So after 21 years of marriage and faithful service, and there are so many stories I'm leaving out, and they're in the book,
They Called Me Mama by Margaret Nicol Laird.
The children have all grown, and they went to college in South Carolina. And Guy went to renew their passports for a needed furlough where they were going to visit their children. But there was a 2-day delay, and he was forced to sleep on a riverbank without a mosquito net. And he came home after this trip, and he just wasn't acting himself. He was very tired. He kept napping. He was almost narcoleptic. He would just fall asleep unexpectedly. And Margaret knew that he had caught the sleeping sickness. Yeah. She just knew. They took him to the French doctors who were there, who were very amateurish, and they denied that he had anything wrong with him. And to get to the doctors, it was quite a trek from where they lived. It was about 75 minutes to get to the closest doctor. And they were Guy insisted that they still go on the furlough. And so they went. They were about to leave. They took him to the mission station. The mission doctors looked at him and said, he's got the sleeping sickness. Why did you delay so long? And she said, I tried not to, but nobody knew what to do. Anyway, Guy passed away in Africa at the age of 61 years old in 1945. Margaret then flew on her first plane ride back to the U.S. She was flown by the government, and she sat in the back. There weren't seatbelts. She was thrown from side to side and threw up quite a bit on that ride. But Margaret knew that if there had been a hospital in Ippi, Guy would not have died. At first, she was resentful. She was resentful of those who misdiagnosed him, resentful of, you know, the inconveniences and that they wouldn't give her the medication that could have saved his life. But the Lord turned her resentment into prayer. And that prayer became a prayer, Lord, give us a hospital in Ippi. So she went to the Mid-Baptist Missionary Headquarters, which was then in Cleveland, Ohio, and she told them of her vision to open a hospital in Ippi, and they said, they laughed. They said, it can't be done. It absolutely can't be done. So she asked permission that when she was asked to speak at different churches, if she could raise funds for a hospital, would you be all right if I asked people to donate to a hospital in Ippi? And they said, fine. Well, they donated. They donated. They donated. She took that money and she bought 28 tons of building supplies, including cement. And by a miracle, she was able to ship them to Africa. And then by another miracle, she was able to get them to Ippi. So she arrives in Ippi, and just even how they got downriver and how they got to the location is such a miracle. But she gets there and she's all ready to, you know, build this hospital. And these men who are part of the missionaries there say, it shouldn't be a woman. A woman shouldn't be doing this. It should be a man that should do this. And it shouldn't be in Ippi at all. It should be in Crampel, a different place. And she just felt her heart sink. And the Holy Spirit just said to her, just be quiet. It's going to be all right. And the head of the missionaries there, who she said was a good man, he stood up and he said, you know, I have noticed that when God wants to do something, he raises up a man to do it by first giving them the desire, just the you know, compelling desire to make something happen. And he said, so I want to know who in here of you men has the compelling desire to build this hospital in Crampel. And so he calls on the first man. He says, no, I couldn't do it. He calls on the second man. No, not me. He goes through all of the missionaries who are sitting there who are objecting to Margaret and objecting to the hospital in Ippi, and not one of them will do it. So he says, well,
put up or shut up, basically.
Since Margaret has the enthusiasm, since she's the one who has gotten all the supplies here by a miracle, I think that we should give it to Margaret. After all, her husband was a civil engineer, and she did live with him for 21 years, and she was here before any of us. By another miracle, the Lord provided the land, because one of the things in Central African Republic is that if you weren't French and you weren't African, they didn't allow you to own land. And she needed a parcel. And how the Lord brought about giving her that parcel of land, again, giving her the favor of the French officials, has to do with a big game French elephant hunter. But you'll have to read the book to hear that story, because it's just too involved. But it's so interesting. He helped deliver his wife's baby. Just the amazing stories. There's another story told about a little boy who was 6 years old who didn't have any parents, and they called him Jigger because his feet were so filled with jiggers. And she removed each one of them. And he was a thief. He was terrible. He was a menace to everybody, and nobody liked Jiggers. And then he disappeared and she didn't know where he was. And all these women started coming to her and she said, you know, why are you coming? And they said, we want to meet the God that transformed Jiggers. He does not steal. He has made restitution. He comes to help. Who is this God? So Jiggers, beautiful. A six-year-old evangelist yes. for Jesus. I mean, it's crazy. The stories are so amazing. Anyway, Margaret was able to build the hospital. She oversaw it. She saw to the staff. She started a nurse's training program in Ippi, where she trained and helped the new nurses. She also taught a new believers class. In other words, she was not idle after the death of Guy. She continued to serve until 1962 when she felt the Lord call her to return to Colorado. So imagine at this time she's about 65, 67 years old. And when she returned to Colorado, she was a popular speaker and continued to raise funds for the hospital in Ippi. She went to be with the Lord in 1983 in Colorado.
Mm.
And her story is one of continual miracles. She was known for her love for the Lord, her love for the people of Central Africa, and her love and enthusiasm for the work of the Lord. Interestingly enough, she received four different awards during her lifetime. 1952, while Guy was still alive, she received the French Legion of Honor.
Really?
From the French government all the way from Paris. And she was one of the very few Americans that ever got that award because the French tend to be a little prejudiced against Americans.
Amazing.
But that's when they called her three quarters French. So they allowed it. In 1959, she was given the Knight of Merit from Central African Republic. It's the highest honor the Republic presents to anyone. And the man who was giving her the reward said, you know, years ago when I was born, Margaret Laird was there. She actually had delivered him. And then he said, and when I was sick, when I was 4 years old, Margaret Laird was there. When my mother took ill, Margaret Laird was there. And he talked about all these occasions and talked about her constancy, her love, her medical skills, and how much she had helped so many. When she came back to Colorado, she got Alumna of the Year by the Colorado Women's College. They honored her and said, this is someone who graduated from our college. And they spoke about her achievements. Then, while she's in Colorado, the Daughters of Hadassah, which is a Jewish organization, they say to her, we want to give you the Anna Eleanor Roosevelt Memorial Award. And she said, are you sure? I'm actually a Baptist. You know, I'm not Jewish. Are you sure? And they said, oh, well, let us do some more research. And so they kind of pulled back and she didn't hear from them. And then they called her back and they said, yes, it's to go to you. We all, you know, read about your testimony. We know what you've done. And we really believe that the award should go to you. It was also during this time when she went back to Colorado that she wrote the book, They Called Me Mama. And that book has brought to light her story and all that the Lord did. And as I said, the book is just one testimony. And Margaret is talking to you, almost feel like you're having tea with her. And she's telling you just one story of how the Lord came through, how the Lord showed himself strong. I was so inspired by Margaret's story. I was inspired thinking how I need every deficit in my life because this is how God works faith in me and this is how miracles happen and this is where testimonies come from. And I'm telling you, this is another woman I can't wait to meet in heaven.
Yes.
I think we're going to have a little area that's going to be the women worth knowing area.
The richness of Margaret's story echoes in so many other stories that we've told about other women and these common threads of trusting God when it seems impossible or you're stepping into great danger and just having that peace, knowing the Lord will fight for you. You will hold your peace. He is leading.
He will be there with you every step of the way. And those moments in her life that she recorded, again, we've said this before, praise God that she wrote it down. And for anyone who has these stories in them, they need to write them down. This is a legacy for us, a walk of faith.
You know what I was really taken with was her willingness to go.
Yes.
And, you know, not to fight against the French officials, but just to say, all right, Lord, use this. Open up the doors. Use me. And the Lord did use her in so many extraordinary ways. So that was Margaret Laird.
Thank
and we want to
Cheryl.
Thank you for joining us. And thank you, Pam Wing.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.